On This Week in Enterprise Tech, we have Curtis Bryan and Heather Williams to talk about Black Hat and DEF CON. Twiet on the set.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twiet, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 304, recorded August 17th, 2018, Bullying Black Hat. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by DigitalOcean, the easiest cloud platform to deploy, manage, and scale applications. Over 150,000 businesses rely on DigitalOcean to remove infrastructure friction and deliver industry-leading price performance. Sign up today and receive a free $100 credit at do.co/enterprise. And by Slack. Slack is a collaboration hub for work that makes sure the right people in your team are always in the loop and key information is always at their fingertips. Learn more at slack.com. And by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage. Wasabi's disruptive cloud storage technology is helping enterprises solve one of their fastest growing issues, data storage. See for yourself with free unlimited storage for a month. Go to wasabi.com, click free trial, and use the offer code ENTERPRISE. Welcome to Twiet, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that is dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and the geek who just wants to know how this world is connected. I'm your host for today, Louis Maresca, but who wants to go on a journey through this big world alone? Today, I have some juggernauts in the industry joining me as co-hosts, starting with Mr. Curtis Franklin, Senior Editor of Dark Reading. Curtis, it looks like you actually made it back alive from Sin City and the infamous Black Hat, huh?
I did indeed. I made it all the way back here. And with a little bit of luck, I will have survived the process. I'm catching up on sleep, catching up on lots of promised phone calls and contacts. It was a great week, and I'm looking forward to telling folks about it even more than I already have.
Absolutely. Well, we're looking forward to hearing about your journeys and your experiences. But of course, we have to introduce one of our other juggernauts in the industry. Joining us, our very own Mr. Brian Chi, Director of the Advanced Network Computing Laboratory in Honolulu. Chibert, how are you, my friend?
Hi. It's statehood day. Whee! Hawaii became a state in this day in 1959. So
you have a day
I'm at home being a slug. It's nice.
Fantastic.
But I'm really looking forward to all kinds of stuff. And I'm actually kind of in stealth mode on working on becoming a first-class CTO for a wireless internet service provider. Woohoo!
Woohoo! We need competent CTOs in the market, so that's great. Fantastic. Well, folks, we also have a special treat for you today. We have the pleasure of having a guest co-host for This Week in Enterprise Tech, and she's the only one in the studio for today. We know her as Mo. She's Heather Williams, Senior Staff Product Solutions Architect at Ruckus Networks and a friend of Twiet. Welcome, Heather, today.
Hi, guys. It's great to be here, finally.
Finally. Well, you're actually also a survivor of Black Hat and DEF CON as well, right?
Yes, although unlike Curtis, I haven't actually made it home yet. So this is my third week on the road. I have a flight tomorrow, and I'm looking forward to being back at the little log cabin at the lake.
Fantastic. Well, we look forward to hearing from your experiences. Plus, look out soon. We might have the pleasure of having Heather as a permanent member of our co-hosting panel on This Week in Enterprise Tech. So check back soon. Well, folks, we have a great show. We are going to talk a little bit about Black Hat and DEF CON. We're going to go in an insider's view of the experience, the content, and the technology from both Curtis and Heather. But first, like we always do, let's jump into the blips. Now, when it comes to laptop-class processors, we always seem to think Intel. They offer the power we expect from today's portable PCs. But Qualcomm recently touted their new Snapdragon 850, which is a higher clock version of your phone processor, as the next-gen CPU that could meet the needs of mobile PCs. But to have a laptop-class processor, you need to be able to perform computations both on integers and floating points and meet the benchmarks of the flagship Intel processors, even their i5 architecture. Well, ARM thinks it's their turn. Starting in 2019, ARM will start shipping They're Dymus and Hercules architecture that is built on a 7-nanometer and 5-nanometer platform, respectively. Not only are the ARM processor CPUs more power efficient than the Intel i5s, but they're also faster at some things. Benchmarks provided by ARM are currently only focused on integer number-based computations, but they're still showing promise towards their Intel competitors. Now, with Intel struggling to fit more cores on their 14 to 10-nanometer platforms and have better power efficiency, ARM might soon have the advantage here. If nothing else, this proves the mobile computing competition in the market is alive and well from years to come.
So Martin Horn, a security researcher at Avast, was researching smart homes when he realized that many of the hubs gathering IoT devices into a unified system run something called Message Queuing Telemetry Transport, or MQTT protocol, which is an ISO standard for device-to-device communications. And quite a lot of those devices acting as MQTT servers have no security at all. It's not that they use a default username and password, he said. It's that they don't have usernames or passwords, period. A relatively simple Shodan search found more than 49,000 MQTT servers visible on the internet because MQTT had been improperly configured. And of those, more than 32,000 have no password protection at all. Now, there are two huge problems with this. First, the MQTT server, by dint of its central position in the IoT network, becomes a central point of security failure that can open the entire network to compromise, even if the individual endpoints are configured securely. Next, MQTT is used even more widely in industrial IoT applications than in smart homes. So check your components. If you have an MQTT server that can't be secured by authentication, make sure it's behind a very tall, very thick firewall.
You know, ISPs, come on. Guys, stop whining. You can't have it both ways. So in an Ars Technical article, they're saying broadband providers have spent years lobbying against utility-style regulations that protect consumers from high prices and bad service. But now, broadband lobby groups are arguing that the internet service is similar to utilities, such as electricity, gas distribution, roads, water, and sewer networks. In the provider's view, the essential nature of broadband doesn't require more regulation to protect consumers. Instead, they argue that broadband's utility-like status is reason for the government to give ISPs more money. Well, that's the argument made by trade groups, U.S. Telecom and NTCA, the Rural Brand and the Rural Broadband Association. U.S. Telecom represents telcos, including AT&T, Verizon, and CenturyLink, while NTCA represents nearly 850 small ISPs. While ISPs want the benefits of being treated like utilities, such as pole attachment rights and access to public rights of way, they oppose traditional utility-style obligations, such as regulated prices and deployment to all Americans. The industry's main arguments against net neutrality and other common carrier regulations were that broadband shouldn't be treated as a utility and that the broadband market is too competitive to justify strict regulations. Utility regulation over broadband can only inhibit incentives for network investment, AT&T warned in November 2017. Dudes, I'm not wild about ISPs trying to play both sides against the middle. Either they're a utility, or we should have open competition. Can't have it both ways, guys.
Google tracks you even if location history's off. Here's how to stop it. Earlier this week, Wired published an article detailing how Google tracks your location even if you have location tracking turned off. This affects both Android and iThingy device users. The creep factor on this falls below the ex-boyfriend who signs up for all the same classes as you, but above your mom calling every night to make sure you locked your doors. Most days, I occupy the same 900 square feet deep in East Texas at my little log cabin by the lake, and I can picture the AI over at Google responsible for tracking me becoming as bored and morose as Marvin the Android from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Amusing as this image is, I followed the directions to stop Google from tracking my location. The directions are specific depending on whether you have an iOS or an Android device, so if you don't subscribe to Wired, I guess you'll have to Google it.
Now, if a 16-year-old hacker infiltrated your network and stole your data, you might think twice about making the information public. Well, according to the court documents from a Melbourne, Australia court, a youngster infiltrated Apple's network on several occasions over a year period and downloaded internal files and accessed customer accounts, all because he was a fan of the company. Now, Apple did identify the breach and notify the FBI, whom brought it to the Australian Federal Police. Now, according to some news outlets, the boy was able to access customer data and managed to obtain customers' authorized keys, basically able to use their login access. Now, the AFP searched the teenager's home last year and seized two computers. The serial numbers of the devices matched the devices that had accessed the internal systems. If it wasn't enough that he was a minor, he also stored the 90 gigabytes of data he infiltrated on his PC under a directory titled Hackity Hack Hack. Now, to pile on to the maturity of the hack, the boy couldn't contain himself, so he bragged about the details of his hacking with members of a WhatsApp group. Now, according to the court documents, the minor did plead guilty to the hack and will return to the court for sentencing in September. Now, if nothing else, this proves that even the giants of the industry are open to vulnerabilities, even if it's a little boy blue from elementary school.
Well, another week, another Intel side channel vulnerability. There's a new speculative execution side channel vulnerability similar to Spectre and Meltdown, but this one is different in a crucial way. It reveals program data rather than program instructions. The new vulnerability, called Foreshadow or T1TF, differs from Spectre in that it's not working on the part of memory holding instructions. Instead, it targets the L1 data cache. Now, Foreshadow seems particularly effective and particularly important on data caches used by various virtual machines. So Google, Amazon, and other cloud providers have hopped immediately on mitigation programs. According to Intel, microcode has been developed and pushed live to help mitigate the effects of the vulnerability. So as with all of these vulnerabilities, make sure you're up to date on patches and, hey, try to stay off the radar of large nation-state hacking organizations.
Warning, rant on. President Trump yesterday signed a defense funding bill that included a sweeping ban on the U.S. government using technology supplied by Chinese telecommunications giants ZTE and Huawei. The bill also includes a narrower ban on using surveillance gear provided by Chinese companies Hytera Communication, Hangzhou Hikvision Digital Technology, or Dahua Technology for national security applications. The legislation directs federal agencies to stop using the Chinese-made hardware within 2 years. If that proves impractical, an agency can apply for a waiver to permit a longer phase-out period. ZTE is in trouble with the U.S. government because it's caught selling telecommunications equipment to Iran and North Korea in violation of U.S. sanction rules. ZTE agreed to a settlement with the Trump administration last year, but then the U.S. government says ZTE cheated on that settlement, failing to discipline employees who orchestrated the scheme and then lying to U.S. officials about it. There is one interesting side note. This bill is actually more lenient on the two tech giants, and it seems to be happening almost at the same time that there's going to be a new giant Chinese theme park about Trump. Makes you want to say,
And now for a different kind of hacking story. Law 360, a legal news service by LexisNexis, published an article last week describing a lawsuit brought by wireless networking company Ubiquiti Networks against rival Cambium Networks with copyright infringement, fraud, and antitrust claims in an Illinois federal court. The suit alleges that Cambium is selling firmware that hacks Ubiquiti's devices. A 2016 webinar available on the Cambium site demonstrates how to use Cambium's Elevate software to convert a Ubiquiti access point by replacing the flash image. The lawsuit contends that the Ubiquiti user interface is replaced, all copyright notices are eliminated, and the device's radio software is switched so that it's no longer compliant with the Ubiquiti's user agreement or FCC regulations. This would make an awesome Law & Order episode.
Now, who knew compression could be the Achilles heel of your VPN? Although most VPNs have done away with using compression by default, some since actually 2004 can still be enabled, and it can then be exploited. Now, the vulnerability described at this year's Black Hat focused on the OpenVPN protocol, which is actually used by the majority of the VPNs out there today. Now, this type of attack is described as an oracle attack, which is a way of saying it exploits the current weakness of a system that can be used as an oracle to give up, to give a simple go, no-go indication. Now, in a general compression, theoretically increases storage and bandwidth capacity by replacing frequent patterns with references. Now, dubbed vOracle, this attack works by injecting data into an unencrypted stream. An attacker might be able to learn whether certain text is included in the unencrypted and compressed data streams by observing changes in the length of the encrypted stream. Now, don't freak out too bad that your VPN connection's under attack, because there are some specific conditions that need to be met to have the attack actually be successful. First, you need to be using HTTP instead of its more secure version, HTTPS. The attacker needs to also be on the same network as you, and you need to visit the site with malicious code on it, and you need to enable compression over OpenVPN. Now, how do you fix the issue? It's really easy. Disable compression by default. Now, some of the VPNs, like NordVPN, were super quick to post a blog post ensuring customers that they're not vulnerable to this such attack. Now, take a moment, check your settings, because the setting you thought was helping you increase your performance over your VPN pipe could actually be leaking your data. Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, the bites, and a little bit about Black Hat and DEF CON. But first, we got to thank a great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's DigitalOcean. Now, as a developer, I can tell you, the ability to experiment with my apps and build them on a truly hosted environment is sometimes hard, and making it easy to actually deploy to those hosted services helps you focus more on the innovation rather than the hosting and deployment part. Now, DigitalOcean actually removes the impedance of cloud deployments and hosting. They make it easier for you to deploy your applications and code and store things on cloud storage without all the steps in between. Now, I also love the names they actually give things at DigitalOcean, starting with DigitalOcean Droplets, which are actually super scalable virtual machines that you can add on storage, security, and monitoring capabilities with just one click of a button. Now, they also have a really great one-click deployment model that makes it easy to bootstrap your projects, whether you want a specific distribution of Linux, like one-click deployment of Ubuntu, CentOS, Debian, Fedora, and more. And how about a one-click deployment application or application stack? Well, add Docker, LAMP, MongoDB, Node.js, MySQL, and more with just one click. Not only is it easy to deploy, it's actually easy to manage as well. Now, VPN snapshots are super simple to take and manage. And for me, that actually gives me a peace of mind that my last known good state is always one click away. Now, they also add really great team management and unified collaboration, which actually helps your teams manage and scale your infrastructure and apps. Now, you need more security for your infrastructure? There's actually a one-click cloud firewall for your droplet or your droplet groups. Now, get this. The cloud firewall is actually free. Now, don't let that fool you, that free button. They're actually not just for testing environments, but they're production-ready environments too. Now, DigitalOcean actually follows a really great model for pay-for-play pricing. It's not only clear, it's concise, and it helps you actually model out the demands of your application and services as they grow. You want more storage? Add more block storage to meet the needs of your application. Just add 10 cents per gigabyte per month, and you will have to worry less about adding peace of mind to your application and backend. Your site is actually starting to become more popular and need to scale more. Well, load balancers are highly available. Fully managed services that work right out of the box, so you can deploy them fast and easy for each one of your droplets. Now, if you're like me, you love to write scripts and manage things as well. Well, DigitalOcean has you covered. They have an elegant API using standard HTTP requests to deploy and manage thousands of droplets and resources in a simple programmatic way. Well, enterprise class SSDs are there, 99.99% uptime SLA, full DNS management, and tons more. DigitalOcean has you covered. If you want to try it out, sign up today and receive a free $100 credit at do.co/enterprise. That is do.co/enterprise for a free $100 credit. And we thank DigitalOcean for their support in This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, let's jump into the bites. We have a pretty good discussion today about DEF CON and Black Hat. But first, we want to talk a little bit about how the venues were. Now, we actually heard a little bit about the hotels in Vegas, in Las Vegas, how they weren't taking any chances when it comes down to big security and that hacker conference that was there in town there, especially Caesar's Palace. Now, I wasn't there, but I did see a bunch of streams of tweets coming from attendees complaining about random searches and sometimes seizures from their rooms in the hotel. Now, in fact, I saw several tweets about individuals being quoted banned from ever returning to Black Hat at Caesar's Palace because they didn't cooperate or comply with the security individuals. Now, there were always two sides to this story, but it sometimes sounds like they were actually using bullying techniques to ensure attendees and residents stayed in line during the conferences. To me, it could either go either way when it comes to bullying. Now, I want to throw this over to Curtis because, again, I wasn't there. Did you see this while you were there?
Well, it's interesting because I heard a lot of people talking about it. I did not stay at Caesars because I had been at Black Hat earlier in the week. I was staying at Mandalay Bay. I continued to stay at Mandalay Bay through the weekend, mainly because I was too lazy to pack up all my stuff and move. I did find it fascinating, though, that Mandalay Bay is the hotel where the tragedy, the shooting occurred only a few months ago. So you would expect that they would be the highest security venue on the Strip. If they are the highest security venue on the Strip, then they do it in a much more subtle fashion than they were doing it at Caesar's Palace. I do think that at least someone at Caesar's panicked. They decided that all of these hackers coming in must be up to no good, and they just panicked. I think it's going to end up costing them a fair amount of money because Dark Tangent, the person who organizes DEF CON, has already announced that the conference next year will not be at Caesars. This was out of hand. Now, hotels everywhere have announced policies basically saying that if you have a do not disturb sign on your door for too long, they reserve the right to go into the room and look around. After what happened in Las Vegas, that is an entirely reasonable and understandable response. But what was going on at Caesars was not that. Like I said, at the very least, someone on the Caesars staff lost their mind and decided that the only response was one that was way over the top, super intrusive, and in some cases bordering on abuse, especially of female and non-binary gendered guests.
Right, right. I don't know about you, but I just wouldn't even keep anything in my room as it is, let alone put the do not disturb on there. But that's just me. Now, Heather, you were there as well. Did you see any of this? Did you hear any of this? Did you experience it yourself?
And I did hear quite a bit about it, just as Curtis did. Certainly my Twitter feed blew up about it. And like Curtis, I opted to stay at the Mandalay Bay, although I did hear that Mandalay Bay, that there were DEF CON attendees at those locations. So it wasn't just at Caesars that some of this was going on. And certainly the walking into a room without knocking, and especially if you're a female traveling alone, is pretty disconcerting. I agree with Curtis that I think at the very least somebody at Caesars failed to consider their audience. Bullying techniques might work in with some people, but if you've got a poorly identified security officer with an iron-on patch on his shirt and something that looks like a plastic ID that without a name on it or anything, that's going to ring some bells that you're not going to get immediate cooperation from this type of audience. And they pushed back, and I think rightly so.
Right. Yeah, actually, I was reading that there was some people that were saying, hey, people are actually exploiting this. Obviously, we're at a hacker conference. People are going to exploit processes and protocols. And they were, like you were saying, they were having people dress up like security individuals. They didn't have any badge or anything. And they were pretending like they were trying to do a search of people's rooms. They're knocking on people's doors. And so people were freaking out. They were calling security and freaking out. I don't know, Cheever, what do you think? Was this just a knee-jerk reaction, or do you think this was, should they have done this?
No, this is bad policy. No matter how you look at it, it's really bad policy. Let's put it this way. I am ex-law enforcement, and there's a very, very good reason why law enforcement organizations spend so freaking much money on badges and why it's so hard to get a replacement badge. The idea is you need credentials that are hard to duplicate. You need credentials that inspire confidence. And when you start hiring a lot of temporary people, for God's sakes, cost of security isn't horrible. You know, you're hiring people because you want to protect your property. You want to protect your guests. Someone forgot this. And even if you're hiring temps, you need to do some vetting. So I'm sorry, Caesars. You know, you guys have forgotten that you are calling these people that are staying on your property guests. You need to treat them like guests. Treat them with some respect. Treat them, you know, especially their non-binary gender guests. Come on. They're sensitive enough as it is. Be nice about it. Law enforcement has had this kind of situation happening to them an awful, awful lot over the hundreds of years that we've had, you know, organized law enforcement. And they've learned a lot of lessons. Now, your security forces tend to be, a lot of the heads tend to be retired or injured law enforcement that have been forced into retirement. Come on, you guys have the experience. Use it. Train your people. Spend a little bit of time. You know, sensitivity training is mandatory at almost every law enforcement organization I've ever worked with. And Caesars, time for retraining.
Right, right. I think so too. I think you know, there's a lot of professionals. Obviously, there's going to be people who pay to go that they're not professionals. They're college students. They're just people from the industry, or just not even people that are from the industry. They're just people are into tech and into hacking, and they decided to go. So you're going to have different levels of tiers of individuals there, but you are going to have professional people. In fact, some of the tweets came from people who are security experts at Google and other companies. They were saying they felt kind of bullied and monopolized on that front. So I think that, you know, this is definitely something that these companies, these organizations, they need to think about, because I think, you know, when people feel bullied, they don't want to go back. They don't want to be part of that. And that's even beyond the conference. It's going to be, you know, that's going to be beyond the conference itself. Now, Curtis, I want to throw this over to you. When you have a hotel room, you travel a lot. Do you feel that you have an expectancy of a level of privacy when you have a room like that?
Oh, absolutely. And courts have said that that expectation of privacy is not misplaced. Now, you don't have absolute privacy within the confines of your hotel room, but neither do you give up all of your Fourth Amendment rights. So it is a balancing act. And what we saw here was someone who forgot the balance. And now this is something that I'm sensitive about, because on my very first business trip back long ago, I was robbed in my hotel room. I woke up one night to suddenly notice that a light was on. I rolled over in bed and there was someone sitting on my couch going through my pants to get cash and such. Fortunately, they did exactly the right thing at that moment. They got up and left. But believe me, that experience sensitized me to these issues. I know what it's like to feel terrified in your hotel room. I know what it's like to feel that you don't have basic security. And both of those things are wrapped up in the very word hospitality. When an organization like Caesars gets the balance wrong, they forget which industry they're in. Now, yes, it's important that all of the guests at a property feel safe and secure. But that means all the guests, not just the ones who don't happen to be going to a particular con. This was unreasonable. And I think that Caesars deserves every bit of the approbation and community shame that's coming down upon them. Perhaps this will be an educational moment for them, and it won't happen again to another group.
Right. Now, Heather, what do you think? Is this making them a target now? I mean, you know, that people feel a sense of community when it comes to these conferences. Like Curtis said, they're sensitive. So, you know, could this create them as a target now going forward, even in future Black Hats and DEF CONs when they even don't even have the conference there? Could this make them a target and make them vulnerable?
Well, I think anytime a group of InfoSec people invade a space, they get attention. But actually, I'd like to take it back. I don't think that this is about security such as it is. It's about the way it was implemented. There's nothing related to security that says that it's okay for a hotel employee to walk into a room unannounced without knocking or just badging themselves in. That's not about to a place that there was nothing reported. There was no wellness check that they were trying to do. Going in and searching rooms and taking pictures of the rooms and making jokes about sharing them on their personal Snapchat, that has nothing to do with security. That has everything to do with just a violation of privacy. I have nothing wrong with increased security. And taking the appropriate steps. And actually at the Mandalay Bay, I did see there was some increased security. It was a little bit more laid back, but there were canine units that were going through the convention center periodically. There was an armed guard in the elevator bay, I'm pretty sure 24/7. And that's okay and that's appropriate. It seemed like they were particularly targeting DEF CON attendees, and Caesars just sort of got a little bit out of hand with the way they went about it.
Well, there's a lot of things we could have done. We're armchair. But I want to send out a message to the DEF CON people, to Caesars Palace, and also use this as a way of saying, Aretha Franklin, I really, really miss you, and I'm sure everybody else does, and I think your song about respect says it all.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, folks, that does it for the bite, but we're gonna get into the DEF CON and Black Hat intricacies real soon. But first, we want to thank another sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Slack. Now, if you haven't heard of Slack before, it's literally the collaboration hub for you and your organization. It brings together almost everybody. There's ways for you to actually use Slack quite usefully and allows you to bring all the groups in your organization, whether it's IT or operations, as well as engineers, development groups, sales, brings them together in channels that let everyone organize their conversations in real-time messaging. Plus, now that they've added voice and video calling as a feature to Slack and file sharing, it provides an unstoppable set of features to ensure your productivity with your groups and teams. Now, why use email? Save time. Go back and search and gain historical context from discussions from different groups, teams, and topics. Slack brings that rich environment for keeping people up to date with what's going on. Now, create a new channel for new issues. Show alerts for real-time updates in those channels. And because Slack can integrate with other systems, it brings the information to you. Get that data from Jira, Salesforce, Zendesk. It's the collaboration hub. Now, Slack keep teams together and ensure that they're communicating efficiently and staying productive each step of the way. Imagine your sales team getting together on Slack. They have to chat about the latest products in order to stay educated on what they're selling, but they weren't able to make it. So they need to come back later and actually view that history and look what's going on and learn about that data. And that gives them that historical context. Plus, they can also talk about clients and dates and then also come back later and view that as well. Slack just creates a place where everyone can stay up to date and ensure they don't miss anything. Now, I've used Slack before, and I can tell you there are some great features out there. I love the feature, which is Slack Threads. Now, you can take a conversation off to the side and start another one without clouding that main conversation. Plus, searching for me is actually super simple. They allow you for some advanced search modifiers like in channels or from someone before and after date. Allows you to really easily narrow down search and find what you need. Now, people of any generation have found ways to use Slack to increase their productivity, whether it's a planning a reunion, handling different facets of an event, supporting a product, or even having your sales team keep in touch with each other. Slack will just make it easier for you. Now, there are tons of public communities and organizations using Slack. I've actually joined DevChat and designers in UX workplaces to actually chat with my fellow industry experts in those areas. It's fun, keeps me connected. And not only that, Slack has a strong app ecosystem as well. You want more functionality and more integrations? Well, like I said, there's Jira, Salesforce, Zendesk, and more, but there's also 1,000 apps that you can add and integrate. You want to add and integrate your system? Well, there's also a thriving developer community as well. Hook up those webhooks and get integrated and get working. Not only can you use Slack on your desktop and on the web, but you can also use it on your mobile devices as well, whether it's iOS, Android, Windows, Mac, and more. They sync seamlessly, and you can pick up where you left off anywhere. Now, over 200,000 developers are using Slack to build what they need to increase their productivity and collaboration. Well, now, why is Slack an amazing sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech? Well, because Slack brings the collaboration back to enterprises as well, too. With Slack's Enterprise Grid, you can literally light up the workplace and get linked together, share channels, and allow people to take advantage of the entire graph of communication in one organization. Now, they can develop organization-wide policies to maintain that company assurance, as well as Slack reduces your email, streamlines your communication, and it'll save your organization and individuals time and increase your productivity. I can't say enough about Slack. Now, with Slack, your team is better connected. Learn more at slack.com. That's slack.com. And we thank Slack for their support in This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's now time to get into my favorite part of the show. And we're going to get into a lot about Black Hat and DEF CON and from our very own Curtis Franklin and Heather Williams. But I think we first want to start out with a little bit something lighter than the nitty-gritty of Black Hat. We want to hear a little bit about the great challenge that has just completed, and that's the National Science Foundation's Wireless Innovation Challenge. Now, this is where Mozilla and National Science Foundation actually created some challenges that looked for innovative ways for wireless technologies to connect people over the internet to each other. Now, there were a couple of challenges here. There were the off-grid internet challenge and the smart community network challenge. Now, Heather, you're quite involved with this challenge, right?
Yes, I was lucky enough to be one of the judges, so I've been involved for almost a year now. And we winnowed the applicants out of the two challenges. We winnowed it down last December from more than 100 to I think about 20 per challenge. I will say that as difficult as some of the news is over the last year and a half, 2 years has been, going through the applicants here and then in the process of meeting the finalists this last week has been faith in humanity reaffirming. And it was my fervent hope that at least some of them would meet each other for coffee and maybe go off and have really smart babies, because solutions that got sent to us were it was truly difficult to winnow some those guys down, and it was it's been a great experience. I would also like to add that the other judges, if you go to their website and you can see the list of all of the other judges, PhD fellows at the Ford Foundation, guys that are at the top of their fields across all kinds of rural and broadband equity challenges. It's absolutely a challenge to your own self-esteem being in a room surrounded by all of those guys.
Right. So can you go into some of the submissions for some of the challenges? Do you remember some of them?
So I can speak in general about them. The winners have been basically decided. There's going to be some vetting from the Mozilla Foundation and the National Science Foundation. And they'll be publicly announced later in September. Of course, both the challenges were intensely interesting to me. The challenge one, which was the off-the-grid challenge, is to solve the problem of how you can reconnect a community after a natural disaster. So how you can get vital comms reestablished. And I do a lot of volunteer work. I know that they've talked about it on Twiat before with ITDRC. And so this was a challenge that was near and dear to my heart. Those solutions that were proposed, everything from software-defined radios to LTE alternatives, of course, mesh, and then some other interesting things that were little handheld radios that had were in 3D printed cases. So there were some real interesting thought that went into that. The challenge too, it was just so hard to pick which one I would have been wanted to concentrate on more, because this one is trying to solve the problem of broadband equity. And there are places, as hard as it is to believe, I'm sitting just north of Silicon Valley, there are places all across the United States still where 70% of the population has no access to broadband. I can tell you that I currently live in deep East Texas, and in a three-county area, there is no fiber that does not involve oatmeal. And so solving our connectivity problem is absolutely near and dear to my heart. I have jury-rigged the heck out of that little log cabin, and it's still debatable whether that's going to be enough to allow me to be a co-host going forward with this. And that's with, I've got three different kinds of connect. I have basically every single possibility of connectivity that's out there. And so the challenge, the guys that were rising to this, it was really interesting. We had about 50% of the guys were solving rural problems, and the other one, and this shocked me. And this was a little something that I could have, I really wouldn't have thought about. The urban areas is actually going to be a harder problem to solve than the rural connectivity. And I would have thought that it would have been the other way around. Watch this space, and we'll talk more about this once the winners are announced. There's a significant amount of money that I think already $300,000 went out in round one. The top winners of each category are going to walk away with $400,000 to invest and to take their prototypes and make them reality. And there's a strong hope amongst the judges that all of the winners are actually going to be helping solve these really critical problems.
Hey, Heather, I want to jump in here. Mm-hmm. I've been working with a teeny tiny little company out of, I think, Vancouver called Sonnet, S-O-N-N-E-T. I've met them on Indiegogo, and they're also on Kickstarter. It's a really, really interesting thing, because I believe they're part of that wireless challenge for off-grid communications. It's a little, right now it's a 3D printed case, and uses LoRa for long-range communications. And with an external antenna, they're looking at possibly 23 miles line of sight, clear air. And then each one of the little devices becomes a small little Wi-Fi hotspot. And then as long as you have at least one, you can connect one of them to the internet, and then it will serve as a LoRa bridge for the rest of the units. They're going to start shipping, they think, in a couple of months. Was Sonnet one of the groups you're able to look at?
Yes, they actually were one of the finalists that made presentations. A presentation. That's actually why I'm here in town. I didn't get to go home. I came out here for the finals. And so obviously, since they were one of the finalists, I can't comment any more on that. But the technology, as I understood it, is actually interesting, because if you think of a traditional mesh network with Wi-Fi, they're basically an intranet. And then if any single one of their devices gets internet access, it automatically becomes the root and can upload the data from the other mesh downlink connections.
Yeah, kind of fun, because when I was doing a DARPA project way, way, way back that became Zigbee, mesh was absolutely brand new. And it's really cool to see that there's a lot more mesh coming out and that they've actually become IEEE standards. Anyway, just thought I'd mention that, because it's really cool.
Yeah, there was a lot of mesh on both sides, a lot of conversation about mesh. And I'm going to go ahead and say this, even though it's probably politically incorrect. There was a joke amongst the room that the real winner, no matter who won, was Ubiquiti, because a lot of the solutions involved off-the-shelf hardware, and it was invariably Ubiquiti. So.
Hey, Mo, I've got a question that came in from one of our listeners on a back channel. When you were talking about the people who were competing, Did you notice any trends? Were there any trends in the male-female breakdown? Are we seeing more women come in and compete in these things, or are we still unfortunately male-heavy in all of this?
So actually in the judges' room, there were, we were actually even a little top-heavy, if you pardon the pun. But amongst the competitors, there were a few women. In fact, some of the people who, making the presentations that were most politically or most technically savvy were women. But no, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, somebody took out a magic wand and everything was made right with the world. And so, no, it was still largely a male-dominated challenge.
Now, you said obviously some of the big network companies were there to, you know, obviously part of some of these packages and some of these entries. Was there, do you feel that there was enough representation of some of the big companies to kind of see some of these groups building things and putting things together that they can hopefully help and assist going forward? Or do you think that there needs to be more representation of some of these big companies to understand how their hardware is being used?
Right. No, this wasn't, and that wasn't an on purpose thing. Actually, one of the things that the challenge was about was coming up with new and innovative ways to use either new products that they've created or something off the shelf. And so of the people who pulled from off the shelf, Ubiquiti was a lot of what was used. And part of that has to do with one of the other criteria was we wanted to see that it didn't just solve a problem in this little island, that it was replicatable so that we could take it from this community and then replicate it. And obviously, if you're using off-the-shelf hardware, you're not having to worry about supply chain problems. That was easier for some of the people to put together. And can I just add that on the bottom, I'm seeing the comments from the chat room. I really don't want to hear about how great your connectivity is at y'all's house. But good for you. I'm so glad.
Hey, Mo. Since this was run partially by the National Science Foundation, was there any kind of comments from the NSF people on what they were hoping to achieve by basically throwing money at this?
I think that was fairly well defined in the scope of the challenge. Not that it was said specifically to us, but the time was incredibly, incredibly short. So when I tell you that we saw 14 of the finalists, so there were 7 from each of the 2 challenges, each team had 5 minutes to make a presentation and 4 minutes to answer questions, and they held us to it. I wouldn't have been on the other side of the table for love nor money. Those guys, they were really under the gun. So we didn't really have a lot of time to interact with the NSF person was there in the room to observe, and there were, of course, a lot of notes taking going on by the Mozilla Foundation people.
Yeah, I'm just kind of curious because, you know, my project got funded by DARPA specifically to support the warfighter, but I'm kind of wondering what NSF was doing. So, and learn.
Well, actually, it was a brainchild between the Mozilla Foundation people and the National Science Foundation. So, I think that there's a realization between what happened in Texas after Harvey, Puerto Rico, and then we're supporting comms up in NorCal after the fires still, and now we have new fires. There's an understanding that without good communications, you can't solve some of the more immediate problems. And so that challenge, I can't think of a better, two challenges to communications that would be better. And they were really very well defined. I think that in the creation of this challenge, there was a lot of work that took place even a year before they even launched the challenges.
Fantastic. Well, it sounds like a really great set of challenges and organizations. I hope some stuff comes out of it because I this is going to be great to see how the industry responds to some of this innovation. Well, folks, that does it for that. But of course, we're going to get into Black Hat and DEF CON. But first, we have to thank another sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage. Now, if you might be saying cloud storage gets expensive the more you store, the more times you access it, and the more operations you actually perform on it. Now, in this day and age, it's true. The cloud storage competition is to see how low you can get the storage fees and the ingress and egress fees. Now, from experience, I can tell you, if you try and go to the bottom or cheaper tiers, some of the cloud storage systems, you also give up on performance and reliability too. These things and more is where Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage prevails. Now, if you're doing small personal projects to large enterprise projects, Wasabi seems to have figured it all out. Listen to this cost. 49 cents per gigabyte per month. That's only $4.99 per terabyte per month. Plus, listen to this game changer. Unlimited free egress and no charge for API calls, so you don't have to pay to actually access your data. Now, you should go check it out right now, what you're already paying on your cloud storage, because I'll tell you, not including your egress fees and API calls for those CRUD operations will substantially save you money on the cost of doing business. Now, you're probably thinking, well, if they're cheaper, they must be slower, right? Well, don't worry about that. They have ways to pull raw performance out of their storage devices without compromising on performance and other things. They have a revolutionary process that lays down data on disks sequentially as opposed to in blocks. And what happens? Well, that means Wasabi storage is about 80% cheaper and 6 times faster in the speed than the industry leaders. Now, are you an organization that's worried about compliance? Well, Wasabi has that as well, both HIPAA, FINRA, CGIS compliant as well. And not only that, they add all the bells and whistles and features to it all. Fast, cheap storage isn't much worth it if your data isn't secure, right? Well, Wasabi has an answer. Wasabi offers a unique feature of immutable buckets that cannot be deleted or altered, and thus protecting valuable data from accidental or malicious destruction, which is not available from competing solutions, plus 11 nines of durability. Now, are you worried about data migration to cloud services? Well, Wasabi also has the answer to this with the Wasabi Ball Transfer Appliance. This thing is powered by Netgear and is designed to transfer large data sets while dramatically reducing your costs and improving your speeds. Now, you might already have a cloud storage already, right? Well, your organization probably has tried to store data even on-premise to save some of your costs, maybe even in co-location data centers. Well, maybe it's time to plan your future in cloud storage by moving your data off your own infrastructure. With Wasabi, it will have you think about that and start doing it now. I bet you are ready to try it out, right? Well, go build something fun or move some of your data right now. Experience Wasabi for yourself with free unlimited storage for a month. Go to wasabi.com, click that free trial link, and enter the code ENTERPRISE. Now, see how much storage in the cloud can save your business. That's wasabi.com, and enter that code ENTERPRISE. We thank Wasabi for their support in This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, I'm ready to talk about this because I've heard so many stories. Obviously, we did some blips on them about what was going on in Black Hat, some of the themes and what's going on. And of course, Curtis and Mo were able to attend. I'm just going to throw it over to you guys. Maybe Curtis, just give a little bit of a summary of what you saw and maybe some of the themes, and then same thing for Mo, and we could just kind of get into it.
Well, I think that in terms of the broad themes, one of the things that I heard a lot of people talking about was the level of the conversations happening at Black Hat and at DEF CON. Now, in years past, the breakdown was pretty consistent. Black Hat was where the CISOs went. DEF CON is where the people who were hands-on went. But this year, there was an awful lot of hands-on, deep technical content happening at Black Hat, and there was a lot of information going on at DEF CON that was hacking-related, but hacking in the classic sense of finding great tips, great techniques. It was not just security-related. Now, within those broad things, I saw a number of things. The whole issue of software-defined radios, wireless, was huge, both in terms of Wi-Fi and cellular, and, if you will, public service or amateur band radio. All of that, a lot of interesting stuff was going on. heard a lot of talk about AI. I spent some time in the AI village at DEF CON, and I'm going to be writing about that in the future, looking at AI both from the offensive and the defensive point of view. And then something that was really interesting, you know, as a journalist in the security field, I truly love the gift that Intel has given us all through the Spectre meltdown family of side channel vulnerabilities. But the fact is that when you talk to security experts, they're just not that worried about them. Why? Well, it's one of two things. Either because things like NetSpectre are so doggone slow. I mean, frankly, by the time you could exfiltrate an entire encryption key, it's time for that encryption key to roll over. And next, because as any number of both offensive and defensive hackers have told me, anything you can get via Spectre and Meltdown, you can get a lot more easily and cheaply through other means. So just all kinds of interesting stuff going on. But once again, as is always the case in these conferences, I was terribly impressed by just the sheer level of sharing that goes on. People are so open, so willing to share their research. It really is the kind of thing that makes you feel better about our species, even if there are times when the individual conversations are scaring the living crap out of you.
Right. Now, Heather, what kind of themes did you see at both of these?
Well, and I had a different perspective because, of course, Curtis was there to attend, and I was working at Black Hat, so I was behind the scenes. So by the time the briefing started, my time was actually sort of winding down. The network has been up. We've pretty much pounded on it, and the traffic amount that traffic that we have eases up quite a bit. So I was able to pop into some of the briefings, but by then I'm also pretty exhausted because I'll have been in Vegas, I think, by that time, 10 days. The briefings that I went into this time, one of the things that I've developed an interest in is in the industrial control systems and industrial control gateway vulnerabilities. And so I got to see a couple of those briefings that were not only really good, but they did some live demos of a model. In one of them, they had a model dam that they then hacked the control system for it and flooded a valley in front of everybody. Between that and the voting booth village at DEF CON, and this was my first DEF CON, so I did get to do that. You leave uplifted because the people and how open and generous they are with their time and information, but also pretty doggone terrified about, you know, the true problems that we're facing.
Right. Now, Chibert, for you, you know, us being kind of outsiders to this, did you see kind of a common theme to some of the things that were kind of common Black Hat DEF CON?
There is an awful lot of buzz, shall we say, about, I heard lots about the voting booth. You know, the 11-year-old that hacked the voting booth, that was well publicized. But there's a lot of back channel flutter, shall we say, about the problems with VPNs. I was hearing a lot about that. But in general, it was all about sharing. You know, I've been to DEF CON several times. I've actually been at DEF CON when I was still a Fed, and I didn't give out one of my tokens, which was interesting. I didn't get spotted until I was at the airport leaving DEF CON. But it's a very, very playful community. Lots of learning. You know, when I was there with Padre, you know, I set up a fairly secure LTE. I actually had it on a private APN, so I felt relatively safe using it. And the whole thing was, there's a lot of curiosity. What are you doing? A lot of teaching. And I think is the biggest theme for DEF CON. lots and lots of people learning from each other, lots and lots of conversations of people in line waiting for the sessions and sharing information. So pretty cool. And Curtis, I really want to hear a little bit about that DEF CON badge. That looked really cool.
Well, the DEF CON badge was really cool. I was looking. I've got mine on my desk here somewhere. Ah, here it is. I have taken the battery out of mine, so it's not all blinky lights anymore. But you can see mine was a press badge. And the interesting thing was there were different badge colors, different badge designs for different categories of attendees, ranging from humans to contest organizers, to goons, to vendors, to the coveted black badges. And every one of them had two features. One is you can see this design on the front. The press, you've got a satellite dish, you've got television studios. Down in the bottom, you've got research libraries and people typing away. Every category of badge had a story on it. And every category of badge also had, here we go, the little connector. And so you connected to other badges. There was a story. There was a game attached to the badge. And you could get all of the details if you came around and hooked a serial device, a USB device into it. You could connect via term and read the story. So these were a lot of fun, but they also ran on four AA batteries, so they were a little bit heavy. Tons of fun, and brought about one of the early bits of excitement for the weekend. On Thursday, a number of people they put in at least one of their AA batteries backwards. And because of the design of the electronics on the badge, if you did that, the other three batteries would try very, very hard to charge the fourth battery. And since they were not using rechargeable batteries, it got really exciting. So that was unfortunate, but it was part of the fun, part of the thing that helped point out that DEF CON is, in fact, a con rather than a formal industry conference. And that difference is critical when you think about just the flavor of the experience. DEF CON was fabulous. Black Hat was its own kind of incredible gathering because you had things like the folks in the NOC. I sat through part of the tour at Black Hat, the tour of the NOC. Grifter came through, and the name of the person who is the leader of the NOC team there at Black Hat. And it's important to note that at the end of Black Hat, there's a State of the NOC report where they give out the entire map of the network, the entire details about what they've done, what they've experienced. And that goes down to including the address space, which means, frankly, that they've got to find new address space every time they turn the crank on a Black Hat event. I'm fortunate. I talked with them. I'm going to be much more involved in future NOCs, bringing the story of the NOC and the people who bring it to life to attendees. And I can't tell you how excited I am about that, especially about the idea of being able to do it not only at Black Hat in Las Vegas, but at the International Black Hats in Europe, that happens in London and in Singapore. So lots of great stuff. And, you know, one bit of technology that I was really excited about, and I heard Mo reference this in her earlier conversation about her judging, software-defined radio is finally becoming something that not just amateur experimenters are working with. It's really just on the cusp of being a true game changer for a lot of things that are going on. And I, for one, can't wait to do a lot more with SDR.
And Mo, did you, as working there, did you get a different type of badge? Because I know Curtis got a press one there. It looks a little different. Is yours different as well?
Yeah, actually, mine does look a little different. I left it in my hotel room. I have to, truth confession time, I actually swiped my badge from my daughter, who was working as a CA. So she was one of the student slaves that was yelling at people at Black Hat. And because she had to return home to get moved into, to start her new semester at college, I swiped her badge. And can I point out that at the end of the Black Hat presentation that Bart and Grifter do every year, how thrilled we are to see the network design up there in bright colors and full definition. It certainly does make our life a lot easier, and it's also the reason why as soon as that presentation is over with, we're pulling the network. We're actually in the closets and yanking on cables as fast as we can.
Now, these types of conferences, they're places where organizations, larger organizations, industry experts will go to learn what not to do, right? I mean, Heather, what do you think? I mean, this is just something that they're showing, hey, let's educate you on the things that we were able to break into and exploit, but this is probably things that you shouldn't be doing. And you should probably go back to your organization and make sure you're not doing them, right?
Well, I think there's a really good argument to be made that unless you know the best and the most effective where all of the holes are, it's really hard to plug those holes. And so I think the education component of this and the reality behind what an InfoSec researcher does on a day-to-day basis is really important. And this, the three times a year, the Black Hat guys come together all over the world to share. It's certainly a lot better than everybody operating in the shadows and not being open about it.
Right. Well, unfortunately, folks, we've run out of time. You know, I definitely want to talk more about Black Hat and DEF CON, because, of course, there's a lot more to it and there's a lot more going on there. So I think maybe in the coming weeks we'll definitely go through some of the topics there. But, you know, you've done it again. You sat through another hour of best dang enterprise show according to 9 out of 10 DEF CON badges. But I want to thank our panelists from dropping some knowledge on the Twiat Riot, starting with our co-host in crime, and of course our tireless producer, Mr. Brian Chi.
I am always ADVNETLAB, Advanced Net Lab on Twitter. And I'm also Chibert at twit.tv, or better yet, there is an email address, T-W-I-E-T, Twiat at twit.tv, that hits multiple hosts. So if you want to talk to more of us, go right ahead. And thank you very much. Yes, my leg is getting better. And I'm hoping next year I'll be with Kurt at Black Hat and DEF CON, and we can go paint the town even redder than it is.
Fantastic. Thanks, Chibert. Of course, I got to thank our other co-host in crime, Mr. Curtis Franklin, the senior editor at Dark Reading. Curtis, can you tell the folks at home where they can find you and all of your work?
Well, Lou, everyone can find all of my writing at darkreading.com. Had all of my stuff from Black Hat and DEF CON. And have a piece, you know, Black Hat and DEF CON weren't actually the only security conferences going on. This week was the USENIX security conference up in Baltimore. There was a paper presented there showing a side channel attack where folks were able to grab the encryption key out of an RSA implementation without even having to touch the device. I wrote about that. It'll be up at Dark Reading in just a few minutes. Go take a look at that. For all of my stuff, you can find me on Twitter at KG4GWA. And lots more visiting conferences coming up. I know that I'm going to be places like Splunk's Conf at the Gartner Symposium and at Dark Reading's own In Security in Chicago. So hope to see some of the Twiat Riot there. If not, you can read all about it in my columns at Dark Reading.
Fantastic. Of course, we need to thank our guest co-host, Heather Williams. Not only did you trek it up to the studio, you also been traveling for weeks. So we thank you so much for being on the show and also being in studio. Could we give you 30 seconds? Can you tell the folks at home where they can find you and all of your work?
Well, thanks. It was a great experience being out here. I'm at MoBetter Wi-Fi on Twitter. There's usually less knowledge and more snark with that. So peruse at your – you've been forewarned at least. I'm headed back to my smoker and my dogs and my husband, and I'll be out and about as Wi-Fi engineer for Black Hat trainings in Chicago in October. And then I guess I'm headed for London. Maybe I'll hook up with Curtis and we'll paint some of that that town red too.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for being here. Well, folks, thank you to you. You tune in each and every week. We want to make it easy for you, our loyal listeners, to come watch and listen to the show. So go out right now to our show page, twit.tv/twiet. We find all of our back episodes, all of our show notes, all the guest information, our co-hosts information, as well as links to all the stories and the shows that we actually talk about during the show. Of course, more importantly, next to the video, there's that magic button that allows you to subscribe the format of your choice, the audio, video, HD video, and the device of your choice, whether it's phone, tablet, laptop, or desktop. And after you subscribe, share the show with your friends and family and coworkers as well. We love doing this show, and with your support, we can keep doing it. Now, after you subscribe, also remember we do this show live each and every week at 1:30 p.m. Pacific at live.twit.tv. And of course, come see how the pizza's made in the background, how goofy we are around here. And of course, if you're going to be here live, you might as well check out our chat room, irc.twit.tv. You've heard of us pulling questions from the chat room in the past, so stop by and say hi. Also, don't forget to follow me at twitter.com/LouMM. Plus, you can check out all the work that I do during my daily job at Microsoft. Check out dev.office.com, where we post all of our latest and greatest ways to customize your office experience. Now, of course, I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to Leo and Lisa, who continue to support This Week in Enterprise Tech each and every week. I also have to thank all the engineers at Twit, especially our producer, Mr. Brian Chi, who continues each and every week to bring us really great guests and really great content. Of course, hit him up on the Twitsphere for any show options going forward. And of course, before we sign out, we have to thank our TD for today, Kevin. Thank you, Kevin, for being here again, sir. Going with tradition, what's the name of the game? What did we talk about today in the show?
Mandalay Bay.
You were close. I was going to say bullying black hatters. And until next time, I am Louis Maresca saying, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep twiet.